the middle of summer is often considered something of a slow news time. A lot of politicians go on vacation, and things generally slow down a little bit in late July and early August. But in the world of education, the summer of 2014 has been anything but quiet. Not only are teachers getting ready to go back into the classroom, several hot-button issues have sparked a national debate, from the future of teacher tenure to the new Common Core curriculum. Education is all over the news. And in just a few months, California voters will get a chance to select the next head of the state's K-12 school system. Today, we get to talk to one of those candidates. Joining us now in our studio is Marshall Tuck, candidate for the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. Welcome.
Thanks a lot for having me, Joe. I appreciate it.
You come to this race with a background in education, in turning around schools, leading in Southern California the Partnership for LA Schools as an education reformer. That's your brand, so to speak. What did you learn from that process working with Mayor Villaraigosa and others in Southern California in those 17 schools?
Yeah, as you mentioned, Joe, my background, I spent over a decade leading two different school systems in LA. One was Green Dot Public Schools, which opened a number of charter high schools in the toughest need areas of LA. And then secondly, working with former Mayor Villaraigosa, where we took over the lowest performing traditional public schools. A couple things. One is you're always encouraged and reinforced by what's possible for our kids if we really give them a quality education. Because we went into some of the toughest schools in LA. Give you an example, Jordan High School was the lowest performing high school in Los Angeles. What lowest performing means is there were 20 students out of 1,000 that were grade level in mathematics when we first got there. And a school that really the system had let down kids for a couple of decades. And so we took those schools over. We saw significant success. We had the highest improvement at the partnership schools of any school system in the state with more than 10,000 kids on the state exams. And we moved our graduation rates up by 60%. So I clearly saw what's possible. But I also experienced really on a regular basis how difficult it is for teachers and parents and principals to run schools and educate kids because of the lack of leadership in Sacramento and because of what's really a broken bureaucratic education code that makes it very difficult for educators on the ground in local communities to do the very best for their children.
So exactly what did you do that made the difference with those schools? Was this a charter operation? How did that work? This is a nonprofit organization.
Yeah, the good news about schools is the formula for public schools is pretty consistent. So let's talk about it. I mentioned Jordan High School. Let's talk about it. First and foremost, we brought in a really strong school leader because you need to have Sherry Williams is a woman who just brought the school to life, believed in her kids, and was really good at helping her teachers get better. Secondly, we made sure that we had effective teachers in every classroom, and that was the teachers that, one, first and foremost, believed in our kids, two, that were able to have the skills to be successful, and three, frankly, we were making sure that they had more time because our teachers needed support, and we actually invested a lot of money in teacher training, teacher development. We found our best teachers that helped their peers be more successful. We brought technology to our schools. We made sure kids had the right courses. And we invested a lot in parent engagement. We actually ran a parent college, Joe, on Saturdays where we actually would teach our parents how to get more involved in their kids' education because, in Watts and East L.A., which are really challenging communities, we had a lot of single-family households, a lot of foster parents, a lot of parents that were new to this country, but they still love their kids. And so we actually invested heavily in getting our parents more involved in our schools. And that's the formula that you see in most public schools. And again, it worked. In the case of Jordan, it went from literally the lowest performing high school to the following year, it was the highest improving high school in the state of California. It just shows you what's possible for our kids if we do what's right by them.
There's some people who say charters are great, they have their role, but it's not the replacement for the traditional model that we have throughout the state. What do you say to that?
Well, what's unique about my background is I led a charter school organization, which is Green Dot Public Schools, but the partnership weren't charters. They were traditional public schools. And I think there's too much time spent on kind of this either or, either charters or traditional public schools. And we need to all focus on what makes the most sense for kids. What is the fundamental change that we need to make in our schools in the state so that if we know that charters have more flexibility and that helps them educate kids more effectively, let's give more flexibility to traditional public schools and local school communities. Because right now, your traditional public schools, and I lived it because I led them, are constrained by a lot of the challenges in Sacramento. So I think that we need to kind of get over this back and forth dialogue and focus on what parents care about. A safe, high-quality school in their neighborhood that's public. That's what a parent wants regardless of governing structure. And we need the leadership to get focused on delivering that.
Even when you move beyond politics, when you talk to teachers, there's always in many cases, I should say, a certain tension between classroom teachers and administrators. The refrain you often hear is teachers say, there's too many administrators. All they do is have new rules for us, and they're out of touch with the classroom. You don't have experience in the classroom as an instructor. Do you think that it changes the formula by having classroom instruction experience in an administrator position, or maybe it's more about organizational leadership and things like that that are different from the classroom experience?
I certainly think for principals, you need to have classroom experience because your main job as a principal is to help develop your teachers. I mean, principals, first and foremost, are instructional leaders. And so it's important that principals have that experience in classroom. I've spent the last 12 years. I've been in classrooms nonstop for 12 years. I actually do have a small amount of teaching experience, so not for extended period of time, where I was in a classroom with a load of kids for a little less than a year. But I've been running schools and turned them around for the last 12 years. I think the key we got to push to is what you alluded to, which is when you have principals and teachers on the same page working together, that's when you have a functional school. And I've never actually come to an effective school that was doing well where you had a lot of tension and conflict between teachers and principals. It's frankly in our schools that are less effective is where you see that conflict. And that's a conflict that's not good for children. There's always going to be some, you know, tension naturally between, let's call it, management and employees. But usually it's a respectful, healthy, focused relationship. And that's what you see in high quality public schools. And I think far too often there are folks at play, you know, both in Sacramento and beyond that lead to this tension, which is just not good for kids. And it has to change because you can ask any teacher, they would love to have a high quality principal that knows instruction. And you ask principals, they want teachers who want to get better. And in teachers' defense, like when we took our schools over, in LA, we had some teachers who their principal hadn't been in their classroom for a year and a half or 2 years. So, you know, how do you expect them to get better? So we got a lot of work to do there, but it has to be on the same team, and that team has to be first and foremost Team Kid.
If you just joined us in Valley Edition today, we're talking with Marshall Tuck. He is a candidate for the Office of Superintendent for Public Instruction in California in the November election, facing off against incumbent Tom Torlakson. What brought you not to this race, but what brought you to this field?
You know, I'm someone who grew up going to church on Sundays. I still do, and really a belief that in life the most important thing we can do is serve other people and help other people have a better life. And I believe strongly that there is no more important issue in our state and our country than education in terms of giving kids the future that they need. And it's an issue we are failing on right now because there are so many children in public schools right now, they're not getting a great chance. And so, you know, at a pretty young age, I started down a traditional path that was outside of education, but I just said, you know what, I'm not waiting 40 years to do what I care about. I'm going to get focused right now on helping people have a better life, and I'm jumping into education. And we've seen a lot of success for a lot of kids over the last 12 years. But what I want to see, frankly, is success for all kids in California. And what I know quite clearly is that will not happen until we get the kind of leadership in Sacramento that truly is focused on a kids first agenda and that really is an independent advocate for kids and parents that is pushing the fundamental changes we need in our state. Because, you know, while we're sitting here, there's 2.5 million kids in California that are going to be in public schools in a couple weeks when school starts that can't read and write at grade level. You know, it's absolutely unacceptable. It's punishing to their future. And we need to all come together and make changes. And that's, you know, that's what we did in our schools, you know, in LA. And we certainly have a long way to go. But that's what we need to do as a state.
A few weeks ago, the Vergara decision made national news as an L.A. County Superior Court overturned the state's landmark teacher tenure law. You have asked Governor Brown not to appeal that decision. Why is that, and what do you feel the importance of that would be?
Well, I've been a strong supporter of the plaintiffs in that lawsuit. And just to give your audience, make sure everyone knows, there was 9 students who sued the state of California, and they sued Tom Torlakson, who's my opponent in this race, as well as the governor in the state, saying that the laws that are written into our legislature and in the Ed Code that say that 2-year tenure for teachers, the fact that layoffs are only done based on seniority, and the fact that it's almost impossible to remove teachers, that those laws violate our students' constitutional right to quality education. And the reason I've been so supportive is because I ran schools. And if you've run schools, you know, like I do, that we had Markham Middle School, this most violent school in L.A., where half of our teachers received layoff notices because more senior teachers didn't want to go to work at Markham, so we had all young teachers. And because seniority is just based on layoffs, half our teachers were going to get layoff notices. And in that case, we also sued. A student of ours actually decided to sue the state. So I was a strong believer in the lawsuit, and I believe that the state superintendent should have been on the side of the plaintiffs. because the vast majority of people in education, the vast majority of the public know that those laws that make it more difficult to have an effective teacher in every classroom, they don't make sense for kids and we need change. And fortunately, the judge literally said that these laws are unconstitutional. The judge said the evidence shocks the conscience is really what he said in his quote in the decision. And it's absolutely time for the current superintendent and the state to not appeal this case, and let's move forward and let's make changes to these laws that truly are focused on what it takes to give kids a good education.
The other hot issue, or one of the other hot issues right now in the world of education, both in California and beyond, is Common Core. It's become sort of a political lightning rod for many critics who say it's a federal takeover education. But beyond that political narrative, you talk to teachers, and I see them split into two different camps. Some who feel it's very good, maybe has some flaws here, but they welcome it after the No Child Left Behind era. There's another group of teachers who have concerns not so much about the politics behind it, but about what it really means in the classroom and this massive shift between the sort of the quantitative model under Common Core and now this new approach that's very much focused on process. And they say things like, why is history and social science sublimated under English language skills? Some teachers may teach things like the Constitution and American history in English, but there's no requirement that they do. What are your thoughts on something like that? Is this the pendulum just swinging from one extreme at No Child Left Behind to another extreme that's focused very much in the opposite way, just on process, or not just on process, but more so in that way? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, Joe, I appreciate you focusing on, hey, the teacher level and the school level rather than just the political level, because I think far too often we get caught in politics versus really what does it mean for teachers and principals. I think with the Common Core, one of the reasons you see so many different opinions amongst teachers is because it's been rolled out so poorly by the state, where we literally did not give teachers any additional time for training. We did not give them significant additional support in terms of getting ready for the Common Core. And then all of a sudden last year said, okay, by the way, you're now teaching the Common Core. And the end result there, I think, as you mentioned, is you have kind of a lot of misinformation. You also have people who are struggling with this transition. And I think that the transition, first and foremost, from what typically has been our prior standards, because the state's always had standards. The prior standards were around more rote memorization. I think this is trying to move us more towards project-based, you know, kind of really critical thinking, more project-based approach towards learning and teaching is one that I think is beneficial for kids. But there's no question that you got to teach U.S. history in this state and in this country, and that there's no, you know, that doesn't get subjugated to English, because that's just the way it needs to be. And frankly, that's not a requirement. I think you're seeing a lot of people, because they did not get the appropriate training and support, are scrambling a bit. And there's just a lot of misinformation, which is playing out based on what you were saying. I think the most important thing the state can do right now, because the state's made the decision to move forward on Common Core, is let's make sure we are getting teachers more time to get better at this. It's a significant shift for teachers in their practice to move from how they were teaching before to where they need to move to. They need more time to do that. Let's inform parents about what really is going on with this transition. Let's make sure we're getting feedback from parents and teachers. And most importantly, let's make sure that local school communities realize and understand that they still have the control over the curriculum. What are you teaching and how you teach it still sits with local school districts and local schools. And let's make sure that that happens and that the state doesn't try to hold on too tight to that going forward.
Governor Brown and your opponent in November, Tom Torlakson, have been working for the past year on shifting education resources to districts where they say the need is greater, districts with populations that have more English language learners, higher poverty rates. They call this the local control funding formula. How would you critique the way that has been rolled out, and how would you approach this differently if you were in Sacramento?
I think the biggest issue on the local control funding is there's a lot of talk about what are people's plans on how to spend the money, but there's not a system in place to show where is the money actually spent and what results were driven. And I think that's what we need to make sure we move towards, which is let's give schools and school districts a lot of flexibility on how to utilize that money. I think that's essential, because the people that are closest to kids, you know, principals and teachers, should be making those decisions. But let's make sure that taxpayers can see clearly with the additional money that's going to schools, how was that spent? And did that work in terms of improving student achievement for kids? So I'm a supporter of the local control funding. I have a son, and there's no question that it's going to be less expensive to educate my child than it was to educate a lot of the kids that I work with in Watson, South LA, and East LA, just given, as you mentioned, a lot of the unique circumstances they have. So I think giving more dollars to those that need it is a good thing. But I think what the state really hasn't done is said, let's make sure that the public can see where the money goes, which isn't that difficult to do, which is really kind of saying with the additional dollars that the taxpayers passed, let's make sure it's very transparent as to what it was spent on. And then did those dollars actually translate into results for higher graduation rates, higher attendance, you know, less violence on campus, and ultimately more student achievement? And that hasn't been done. That hasn't been the focus. I think that's something where we have to move to stronger accountability on the back end as a state. Like, my philosophy is always give local communities significant empowerment to make decisions for their kids, but then also let's have strong accountability to make sure that's working for kids. And that's the next phase that just hasn't been there on local control funding so far.
We've been talking with Marshall Tuck today on Valley Edition. He is a candidate for the office of Superintendent of Public Instruction on the November ballot, facing off against incumbent Tom Torlakson. Marshall Tuck, thank you so much for joining us today.
Joe, I appreciate you having us, and I appreciate you focusing on this race. There's nothing more important to our state. Thank you so much.
Well, that's all for today's Valley Edition. As always, you can find our podcast on our website, kvpr.org. You can also, when you're there, send us an email. The address is talk@kvpr.org, or follow us anytime on Twitter. We are at Valley Edition and at KVPR. For Valley Edition producer Ezra David Romero, audio engineer Marv Allen, and production and operations manager Don Weaver, I'm Joe Moore. This is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, the California Endowment. Health happens here, where we live, learn, work, and play. Learn more at calendow.org. And the California Healthcare Foundation, rating hospitals, doctors, and long-term care. Smarter choices start at calqualitycare.org.